Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, with the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton, color analyst Jeff Lagerman, and Jaguars.com senior editor Vic Ketchman. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Community First Credit Union, Carrie Limousine, Wachovia, Sonny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
You bet you. Off and running here on a Wednesday night. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, only on News Talk Radio WOKV and only live from Everbank Field in Jacksonville. Brian Sexton along with the senior editor, Vic Ketchman, Jeff Loggeman's here, Joe Fortunato, John Dineen, our road partner, makes his annual weekly trip down, and he brought his wife, Lynette.
He's out kicked.
Yep.
Way out kicked his coverage. Ooh.
That's a shout out to Lynette for all the folks in Atlantic Beach listening. So we've got a nice evening going here. We're happy with that. Lots to talk about. Jaguars and Titans. You know the number, 800-355-NFL1. At Jags Voice, if you tweet her. Tweeter.
Twit.
And, that's kind of what it's become for certain quarterbacks, right?
Yeah.
And we'll get your questions to these guys. So, quick look at the injury report. 8 Jaguars on there.
Titans injury report is
it's pretty significant.
It's problematic for them.
I'm gonna
pull it up here. A lot of did not participate.
I'm gonna pull it up here and read it off for everyone who is listening. Titans injury report. Here's the Jaguars injury report. Right, Lejay Doosable with an ankle did not participate. Mike Sims Walker with an ankle did not participate. Tyson Alualu knee was limited. Jake Lutrera head limited. David Garrard wrist limited. Jason Hill calf limited. Vince Monaway back limited. Terrence Wheatley hamstring limited. And then we go to the Titans. Dave Ball, concussion, limited. He did not play last week in Houston. He's obviously the right defensive end. He's got 7 sacks for them. Rob Baronis, the kicker, did not participate.
What did he do?
A groin. He's got a groin.
Ooh.
That could be problematic. Kenny Britt with a hamstring was limited. Are they thinking he'll be back this week? It's been a pretty severe hamstring.
I don't think so. He's 3 games in a row he's been out?
Yeah, he's not quite back. Tony Brown, the defensive tackle. Did he play? I don't know that he played last week.
He did play.
He did
not play well, but he played.
He's got a knee. Did not participate in practice today. Kerry Collins limited with the calf, and obviously
he participated in pregame last week, and they thought he might go. Then they shut him down, and Jack Del Rio said today he's absolutely sure Kerry Collins will be their starting quarterback on Sunday.
Yeah, I think they think if he has to throw the crutches aside,
he's going to tape an aspirin to it. I mean, my gosh, they got three division games in a row.
Yeah, they're going to need that. Jason Jones, maybe their best all-around defensive lineman, did not participate in practice today with a knee. He did not play last week with a knee. Their best backup, Derek Marks, with an ankle that knocked him out of the game in Houston, did not participate. David Thornton coming back from a hip that had him on the PUP list and inactive, did not play or did not participate. And Alteron Verner, their rookie corner, did not participate
and
with a knee.
Starting corner.
Yeah, starting corner. So they've got a more serious injury situation. Obviously no one's counting them out, but boy, they got a rally like they did last year after getting shellacked 59-0 in New England. Today was the first day of chemotherapy for Mike Heimerdinger.
Yeah.
Obviously the quarterback scenario that's problematic right now up there. Lots of injuries. They've lost 4 in a row, and you've got Chris Johnson tweeting, "Hey, we should run the ball more."
You can't imagine what this is like for Mike Heimerdinger. The first day of that is like the worst day of your life. There's no describing it.
Well, give us a sense. We've not been.
You change. You undergo a radical change. Things smell different. Things taste different. You very very quickly feel your hair falling out. It happens very quickly.
And you're talking about Mike Heimerdinger, the Titans offensive coordinator, who was diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah, and there's no way you keep your mind on one thing and one thing only, because you know that you've got a major challenge just to get up every morning and go to work.
So is that why Jeff Fisher came back this week and said he might be there on Sunday, because he gave Mike a goal?
There's no telling how this is going to hit him. He could not. It's possible that he would have to miss the game. Yeah. I mean, it makes you sick.
Yeah, I'm sure that they've made plans to do that. I mean, they've got an experienced staff that's worked together for a long period of time. Obviously, Mike Munchak, the offensive line coach, one of the finest in the league.
Yep.
Assistant head coach and running backs coach Craig Johnson. you know, Heimerdinger is a very bright guy, and I would have to think that, that he's there, but I would have to think that somebody else is pretty much running the show offensively for them, because you just don't know what kind of situation that Mike's going to have on game day.
Here's the thing about chemo, guys. The younger you are and the healthier you are, the harder they hit you. They pour it on. I mean, whatever you can take, the more you can take, the more they pour in. Now, I'm going to guess that Mike is a healthy young man, other than this
whatever it is,
this cancer that they've detected. So my guess is they're going to pour it on, and my heart goes out to him. I just because he got blindsided on this, didn't he? I mean, there was no inkling.
He wasn't feeling good. Had a couple of rough weeks and went to the doctor.
He's a great guy. I've got to know him over the last couple of years, kind of through Dave McGinnis, who is their linebackers coach, and met Dave a number of years ago and talked to Dave all the time for the game. He's one of the great personalities in coaching in the National Football League, and met Mike Heimerdinger through him before the games, you know, and Mike Heimerdinger actually used to recruit this area when he was a college coach, and so he knows all about this area. I mean, he can tell you all the high schools, you know, the coaches that are still coaching here. Just a wonderful guy.
Here's the thing that concerns me. If I was the Jaguars, it would concern me about this game. And that is that Kerry Collins has a rescue quality. Throughout his career, he has resurrected teams. He resurrected the Giants in a similar late-season situation.
He did.
He resurrected the Titans a few years ago.
2008.
But that was much earlier in the season.
Well, that was opening day.
His track record is... He doesn't sustain it, but he gives you an immediate charge, an immediate lift. I got to tell you, I know they're banged up and battered and abused and everything else. It's a bad situation for them, but this is exactly the situation that I wouldn't want them to be in if I was going to play them, because that's always when Jeff Fisher's teams play their best, is when their backs are to the wall.
Well, and they did last year.
Yeah.
You know, they got shut out last week against the Texans. The last shutout that they've had prior to that was their shutout in New England 59-0, who they played the Jaguars the following week at home, who they beat the Jaguars 30-13. Here we are. They've lost four in a row. They got shut out in Houston, and then they've got the Jaguars.
See, remarkably similar to last year.
Four in a row. They've lost four in a row.
Then.
I mean... You know, the more they lose, the greater the odds are they're going to win. I mean,
kind of eerie, isn't it?
Last year
and this year, and they got the same.
Well, remember
same matchup.
The Vince Young thing was prominent last year too, because Kerry Collins started that.
Got Kerry Collins maybe coming back. You know,
but Vince Young was in the middle because the owner said you need to start him. Remember that was just, it was a mess last year. I think it's probably messier right now though.
I'm waiting for Jeff Fisher to throw Randy Moss off the team. And that kickstart him. I think he's hurt him. He hurts.
Yeah.
He hurts teams.
Three of his four catches since joining them came last week in Houston.
I mean, he joins the team and Vince Young melts down. He joins the team and Cortland Finnegan melts down. I'm stunned that Jeff Fisher.
Cortland Finnegan was that way before Randy Moss got there, though. He's always been that way.
All right, we're due for a break. First one of the night. We'll come back, talk about the Titans. Big matchup, Jaguars and Titans, AFC South, first place on the line. And by the way, if the Titans somehow beat the Jaguars, they pass them, because they'd both be 6-6, and they'd have a 2-0 lead. As big as it gets. We'll take this break and return. More to come. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Roll right along here, Jaguars This Week. Hey, when the Jaguars win at home, you win at Sonny's Real Pit Barbecues across North Florida. You'll get a free barbecue pork sandwich with your game day ticket stub on a Monday or Tuesday after the Jaguars win at Everbank Field. That's at all participating Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue restaurants. Phone lines are open, 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. If you'd like to join us on the program this evening, back to Tennessee. We said big, but it really doesn't get any bigger than this, because the Jaguars...
It'll get bigger. If you win this game, I mean, ultimately, the Indianapolis game, if you win enough games, the Indianapolis game is going to decide this. Let me put this in the simplest terms I can for winning the division for the Jaguars. They got five games left, and four wins will do it. If one of those wins is in Indianapolis, and if Houston loses one more game. For instance, if Houston loses this week to Philadelphia, is that Thursday night, tomorrow night?
Yeah.
If Houston loses tomorrow night in Philadelphia and the Jaguars were to win the next four games, they'll have the division clinched before they go to Houston.
Here's why I say it's a big game. Because if you look in 2008, the Jaguars went 1-4 in their final five
games. Oh, it's a big game. I'm with you, yeah.
Same thing last year. You know, we all know about it now. 1-4 in their last five games. Mm-hmm. And then last Sunday, they couldn't get the win to kind of, you know, one of those, hey, let's go win this kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just puts the onus right here because people are looking and going, okay, how are you guys going to finish this season? And so this is a game that not only decides the playoffs, but decides whether you're real or not.
They've got five games left, and in my language, they've got one to give, provided they win in Indianapolis. You can't give that one, you see, because then you lose your head-to-head tiebreaker.
Right.
If you win in Indianapolis, then you've swept them head-to-head, and that trumps everything. And, of course,
the Titans move ahead
of you. Yeah, but you got to win this game.
Well, yeah, because what that does then, it puts the
all the scenarios you're
Titans
talking
in a situation where they can't win ten games.
You have to win this one.
No, you can win your last four, and it'll work,
wait a minute,
Jeff. You got one to give.
Yeah, but that's counting on Tennessee to lose after this game.
Yes, it would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They host.
Hey, wait a minute. They got to play Indianapolis twice.
So?
I don't think it's beyond reason to expect Tennessee to lose again this season.
Here's the fact. You lose this game this week, Tennessee jumps in front of you.
Okay.
That's why it's big. That's the only reason
you need
to know.
I'm with you. I mean, it's big, but it would not be as big as Indianapolis because you can't win this thing without winning in Indianapolis. You can win this thing without winning in Tennessee.
What's the same assumption you're talking about? If Indianapolis loses in the remaining games, the Indianapolis game is not that big.
Jeffrey, I put a lot of study into this.
I know you studied it, Vic. That
game was not that big.
And it was big.
It was not big.
It was big.
They finished the day the same way they
you
started.
You would have had a game ahead of Indianapolis right now. Hey, when you get past...
All right, yeah, and I mean, you know, if I...
That doesn't make that a big game?
Yeah, but you lost nothing. There was no loss in any way,
shape,
or form.
You lost cushion that you would have had.
Well, you didn't have a cushion. You were tied, and you finished the day tied.
You would have had cushion after that game if you had won.
What you're saying is you lost opportunity.
Yeah.
No, but still, if you don't win in Indianapolis, that cushion would have been gone because you'd have lost a tiebreaker.
Here's another thing to consider. The Titans host the Jaguars on Sunday with a chance to go 6-6 and jump ahead of them.
Yeah.
And then on Thursday of next week, after hosting the Jaguars, they host the Colts.
Mm-hmm.
So in the span of 6 days, you know, they could be in first place.
Yeah, and I wouldn't assume that the Colts are going to win down the stretch the way I saw them play on against the San Diego Chargers.
Except their schedule's soft.
I don't care if their schedule's soft. Did you see that game?
I know, they were horrible.
Holy cow.
I've never seen Manning like that.
Well, and the one thing that Dallas has is a fierce pass rush.
Here's the thing that this is what's going against the Colts. Winning the division title would be a real charge, a real kick for the Jaguars. The Colts aren't about winning division titles. They're chasing the big prize. You know, they want Super Bowls. I think it's now sinking into them that they are not going to win the Super Bowl this year. That might cause in them a letdown. Yeah.
355-NFL-1. Let's grab Lloyd in Mandarin for our first caller of the evening. Lloyd, welcome to the program.
Yeah, it's Roy. Good evening, gentlemen. I had two questions. I think we've got one resolved. Vic had mentioned earlier in the week on a radio program that if the Jaguars won four of their next five games and beat Indianapolis, he said they were short of being divisional. Well, that's not correct.
I said I guarantee it, and if they don't win the division title, come and shoot me in the head. All right? I didn't say they clinch. I'm saying I guarantee it.
Well, okay, but I was under the assumption.
Well, you assumed
wrong. Indicated that if they'd won the last four, and included or not for the next five, and beaten Indianapolis, that you were pretty much guaranteed.
Okay, so we know that now. Anything else?
Okay. The other question is for Jeff. I had my question is concerning the last Jaguar game. Maybe you can comment on this. With there were 7 minutes left in the game. The last 7 minutes, the Jaguars, after having running the ball all over the place the first half, in the last 7 minutes of the fourth quarter, they didn't run a single running play. I was just wondering what your take was on.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think
so. Gee, we haven't talked about
I'm just, I mean, I'm not going to go into play call and run pass. I mean, come on, Roy. I mean, can we get past that part?
If they passed and it didn't work, they should have run. If they ran and it didn't work, they should have passed. That's real simple. If they lost, it's wrong.
I'll tell you this. When the game's on the line, I don't care, run or pass. I want the ball in my best player's hands.
Okay.
Is that good enough for you, Roy?
I'm fine with that.
Who's the best player? Maurice Jones-Drew. I don't care whether you get it to him, run, pass. I don't care. Put it in his hands.
I buy that. I have no problem with that. If I got Jim Brown, I want the ball in Jim Brown's hands. And for this team, Maurice Jones-Drew is the equivalent of Jim Brown. I understand that thinking completely. But let's not go goofy on the running stats in the second half. He ran the ball 11 times in the second half, the best player on the team, that is. He ran the ball 10 times in the first half. So it's not like they took him out of the game. He got one more carry in the second half than he got in the first half.
Well,
hold on. He had, of his 10 carries in the first half, 7 of them fit into the category of effective runs. Of his 11 carries in the second half, only 3 fit into the category of effective runs. So it's not as though there wasn't a decline in the performance of the running game in the second half.
Yeah, that was pretty clear. I mean, Giants defense came out in the second half and clearly made adjustments or played better, whatever you want to call
whatever.
It.
Well, Kenny Phillips came to the line on almost every play, didn't
well,
he?
Well, and they were in the first half. I mean, they were in the first half and they were still gashing them. And I don't know why that stopped in the second half. But they needed that. I mean, the worst scenario that you could be in against the New York Giants is down. And you know what I mean? Down. Needing to score points at the last part of the game. You needed to keep that game close to where you could keep balance, where you could continue to run the ball. Because if they got cranked up with their pass rush in a must-throw situation, which is how that game ended, you were going to be in trouble. Yeah. And it will be the same thing this week in Nashville. If you go to Nashville and you're in the second half and needing to throw the football, you will be in trouble.
If they stop the two-point conversion, they are either kicking, centering for the kick to win the game from the 29-yard line, or centering to kick the field goal that's going to put them into overtime. And this is the one that no one talks about,
yeah.
This two-point conversion. It was huge.
Yeah, and it wasn't a very good job by the defense.
No, they ran it in. They ran it in, a dive play off left tackle, and it scored. And to me, that was the biggest – the biggest failing in the second half was the inability to stop a two-point dive play.
But you know the thing that I liked, and I said this during the broadcast, I liked the fact that this team went on the road and was competitive, had the lead, lost the lead, were fighting back for the lead. That's what I want.
Yeah, because in the 4 previous losses, there was none of that.
That's what I want. I mean, I don't want the loss.
Right.
You know, I mean, hopefully people understand that point from me. I mean, But at least it was a competitive game, and they were short on a couple plays.
Jeff and Brian, in 2007, at a similar time in the season, it was December the 2nd. It was the first week of December. The Jaguars lost a game in Indianapolis, 28-25. Very, very similar type of defeat, where they just came up short. And there was a lot of angst afterwards about it. But, you know, it was that game that proved to this team, to that team, that it could play with a playoff-caliber team late in the season, and then they went on a run. I think this Giants game has a chance to do the same thing for this team that Colts game in 2007 did for that team.
All right. We'll continue with Jaguars this week with Jeff and Vic and you, 800-355-NFL1, at Jags Voice on the Twitter. By the way, Bueller Swiss Watch Company, proud to be the official watch of the Jaguars. You can get your Bueller Swiss at Allen's Jewelers in Jacksonville, Robinson Jewelry Company in Fernandina Beach, Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, Kingsley Jewelry in Orange Park, and Lords and Barons Jewelers in Tallahassee. More after news on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Welcome back. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, Brian Sexton, Vic Ketchman, Jeff Loggeman, Joe Fortunato. And phone lines are stacked, so any objection?
No, we'll go right to them.
All right, here we go. 355-NFL-1, Paco joins us from Ponte Vedra. Welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Big fan of the show, long-time season ticket holder. I had a couple of quick questions for you guys. First one is, why haven't we heard anything about Mercedes Lewis and any offers for extension on his contract? And the other thing, I just wanted your opinion. I know how we match up well against the Colts, but at their stadium when I saw the Tennessee game, it just seems like we didn't match up well at all against Tennessee, and I'd like to know if you thought that was just an aberration, that they just wasn't the effort involved. Or you just think that we really don't. There's just a way that we just don't match up well with that team. Thanks for the answer, and a good day.
Stay on the phone. Stay on the phone, and I'll answer the first one. I'll leave the second one to Jeff. So let me ask you this: what's the rush on Lewis?
Well, we signed Jones-Drew way ahead of time. We signed Garrard.
Paco, you're right. I mean, if they could, I'm sure that they would have done something already, but Mercedes chose to not negotiate now and to wait. That's his choice.
Mm-hmm. But
the Jaguars have wanted to do something with Mercedes. I mean, he's a phenomenal player.
But the point I'm trying to make is there's no rush because they have a thing called the franchise tag, and it pays $5.9 million to a tight end, which isn't going to break the bank. So Mercedes really doesn't have much leverage.
But I wanted to make sure that he got the information that the team has tried to negotiate with Mercedes.
Yeah.
And I guess you were under the impression, Paco, maybe they had not initiated. They have. And Mercedes has chosen to wait.
Now, is there a limit on how long you can keep someone in a franchise? Is it 2 years?
No, you franchise them every year for the rest of their career if you want.
And if you look at who was the player that got franchised
Walter Jones.
Every year?
Walter Jones.
No, there was another one, though.
What position?
Talking about for the Jaguars or
No. Around the league. There was a guy that got franchised nearly every year.
Okay. Well, I can tell you Walter Jones was franchised 3 consecutive years.
Didn't they do the same thing with Sean Gilbert?
No, he got franchise tag and then was signed by the Panthers, and they paid 2 first round picks to the Redskins.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank. I'll think of it in a minute, Paco. But your second question: why don't they match up well with the Titans?
Did you think that they just don't match up well against them, or was that first horrible game in the stadium? Was that just they just think bad game planning and just didn't come out?
I believe that the Jaguars can match up with anybody as long as they're not trying to play to come back from a lead or have the opponent get an early lead. You know, this is a team that has to have balance on offense. And if they get in the situation where they've got to throw the football, you lose the role, essentially, of your best player in Maurice Jones-Drew.
To support what Jeff is saying, let me tell you this, that in the last 4 games, the Jaguars have outscored their opponent 58-19 in the first half. It's no coincidence that they have won 3 of those 4 games. That's the formula for this team. Get a lead. I'm not going to say get a lead and sit on it, but certainly playing out in front has a pacifying effect for this quarterback.
355-NFL-1. Appreciate the phone call, Paco. 355-6351.
Wasn't Julius Peppers the guy that got franchised for a couple years
in a row? He got franchised 1 year because it was a $17 million franchise.
I really think...
Huh? Darren Sproles, no.
No,
I really think
you're
thinking of Walter Jones because he is.
No, he was a defensive player for some reason.
Jones is the example because they gave him.
They franchised Darius here back-to-back years.
Mm-hmm. No, it wasn't him. Drawing a blank, but I'll think of it.
Jones got franchised 3 years in a row.
He did.
Then got a big contract, all right? But the franchise tag ended up paying him more money over 3 years than the big contract he got. And the fourth, year.
And that will be true for certain positions.
Right.
Certain positions, that will not be true.
For tight end.
Quarterback, left tackle,
fullback,
cornerback. You're okay getting franchise tags, but the key is that you can't get hurt.
355-NFL-1. Let's grab Steve in Arlington. Steve, you're up next.
Gentlemen, good evening. How are you doing this evening?
Good.
Good. First, let me say, as a long-term from the day one Jaguars fan, this is Titans week, and I hate the Titans. And I hope they go up there and absolutely destroy any hope they have of getting to the playoffs. My question for you guys is, we're going into December now and hopefully into the playoff situation. How does the coaching staff, the players together work out getting over all of the mental breakdowns that seem to be happening, especially defensively, but, I mean, it starts with the quarterback who doesn't throw the ball away on time. You know, the safety who can't get over in time because the cornerback hasn't come up and pressed. You know, all those little things that are, that mentally, more than physically, are affecting the performance of the team. How do they overcome that going into December and forward?
Well, as far as the quarterback goes, I mean, yes, I mean, David, in his ninth year, you would expect that that would not happen. It happened against Cleveland, first and goal from the five. He took a sack, I think, on the first play. I mean, hey, look, you just can't do that. You can't run out of bounds for a three-yard loss when you can just throw it into the turf and not take a sack. I mean, so, I mean, there has been a number of sacks that have been on David. There's no question. As far as the secondary goes, I mean, you got to remember, you got second-year player, Rasheen Mathis in the secondary. I mean, that's what you got. I mean, there are going to be plays in which things don't look good. I mean, that's part of the growing pains of having a young secondary. Now, you wish that you had, you know, a Justin Tuck and O.C. Umanure and a Jason Pierre-Paul up front to kind of hide some of those deficiencies, but it's not there yet. You know, defensively, you're doing a rebuild job from the ground up. It's not one section and then we're okay over here. I mean, you're doing it from the ground up. There's going to be things like that. But now, second year, here we are coming into post-Thanksgiving month of December. Yes, you want to see some of those things cleaned up, and I think we have seen some of those cleaned up. The defense has improved.
There's this constant demand of David Garrard that he be Peyton Manning-like, that he be efficient, that he do all these things, get rid of it quickly and throw it away, and that's not who he is, and it ain't going to happen.
Well, it needs to happen.
It's not going to happen.
Well, it needs to happen.
He's 32 years of age, and he... 34?
But you're never too old to learn. I mean,
it's not
going to
happen,
cow.
Jeff.
I mean,
this is what David is, and this is the way David is going to play. He plays this way, and he will continue to play this way. You're not going to change the spots on this leopard. You're not going to change the stripes on this zebra. You have to live with it. You have to accentuate the positives in his game and try to play around the negatives. You have got to give this guy pass protection. We know that. If there's one thing we know about David Garrard is that given time, he's fabulous. Given a rush, he's awful. And we saw that Sunday night.
We saw it against these Titans here on Monday Night Football on October the 18th, too.
Right.
Hey, before you guys take a break, got a call from Leo, three-time franchise player, Sean Alexander.
Good running back for the Seahawks.
Yeah, that was one, but that's not the one I was thinking of. There was another one.
Okay.
And maybe it's not, I don't know. I'm drawing a blank. But I'll think of it. Give me time.
Thanks for the call, Leo. Hey, folks, when you're looking for department store style this holiday season at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. Six Jacksonville locations for your Christmas shopping. Stein Mart. More fashion, less price, and more Jaguars this week resumes right after this on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Here we go towards the end of the first hour of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. And we go back to the phone lines and bring Robert from Las Vegas onto the show. Hello, Robert. Welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. I love the show. My question is for Jeff. Wondering how the linebackers been playing recently.
You know, the one guy I think that's been playing the best maybe has been Justin Durant. I thought since he's come back from injury with a couple weeks to kind of get back to speed, he's been real good. The disappointing one I think last week was Daryl Smith. Boy, I mean, here's been the guy that's just been a rock. And I didn't think he played all that well in New York. Had a couple breakdowns on the two-point conversion there. I didn't see a kind of a sense of urgency on that play. But I mean, you know, I'm not going to call him out to where he's just being has been terrible, because I mean, it's Darryl Smith we're talking about. I mean, he's been as consistent as
leads a team in tackles.
Yeah, I mean, his tackles are still there, but you need to have some game changing plays out of Darryl. Some plays that make you go, ooh.
Well, that's the thing that's kept him out of the Pro Bowl is he's not.
Yeah, but he's had a few. I mean, every year he has, you know,
the interception against Denver.
Yeah, interception first week, you know, and I mean, he has plays like that. Kirk Morrison is playing hard, but not playing real aware. You know, I mean, I love his effort, and he's 100 miles an hour. He's made some great hits, particularly against Cleveland. Set the tempo on the sudden changes. But against the Giants, and we saw what the numbers looked like for Bradshaw and Jacobs, and they were pretty hefty numbers. Kirk didn't fit real good against the run. Darryl didn't fit real good against the run. Those two guys this week against Chris Johnson, you'd better fit better or else it's going to be a home run.
Last year, this game produced two whopping rushing performances. Maurice Jones-Drew rushed for 177, and Chris Johnson rushed for 228.
It's the only game, I think, since the merger where you had four touchdown runs of greater than 50
yards.
How
about 400 yards rushing from two guys? Are we going to see that kind of game this week, Jeff, or are you going to have to throw the ball to win?
I think you got to throw it to win. I think both teams can stop the run. I think Jaguars have improved enough, and Titans are good enough against the run. So it's going to be an interesting game.
This is
Titans gave up 188 last week. Arian Foster had 143. Is that because Jason Jones didn't play because they're beat up along the front?
That was a weird game to watch. From the very beginning of that game, it looked as if the Titans believed they never had a chance.
They
didn't care.
Did Houston have big time of possession advantage in that game? Because
it was 40-20.
Yeah. So I mean, that's a big part of it, right?
The Titans looked so bad that the Texans' defense looked like it was dominant. And is that the case, or did Tennessee look that bad? I don't know.
Well, you got a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, but, well, you mean rookie quarterback, you're missing a couple starters along the defensive front. You had the Vince Young thing going on. Hey, look, whatever happened, Tennessee did not look good. But the crazy thing is against New England, at New England last year when they were 0-5 and went to New England and ended up 0-6, they didn't look good there either.
You know, this is the guy. I can't tell you why, but this is the game I have been looking forward to all year long. This is the game when the schedule came out. I don't know what it is. I guess a big part of it is it's December. It's the first game in December. I get an extra charge, an extra lift from December games. I like the idea that we're going to play in a place where the weather is going to, like it was last week in the 40s, cooler. We're going to be outdoors. It's not going to be one of those godforsaken dome games like we're going to be looking at in Indianapolis and Houston, which I just hate. The idea of finishing the season with back-to-back dome games, I hate. So this could be the last outdoor road game of the year. I can't tell you other than that what it is. Maybe it's Jeff Fisher. I love his teams. I love the way they play. I love the rivalry the Jaguars and the Titans have. But this is the game that has been the one for me that I've been pointing to.
Did you see the article? It was last week in advance of the Texans-Titans game, and it was written by Solomon, the columnist for the Houston Chronicle, and basically he savaged Jeff Fisher because there are people in Houston obviously saying, hey, bring him back here. It was, you know, if you're going to throw him out, remember the whole Vince Young versus Jeff Fisher argument of last week. If you're going to throw him out, bring him here. And Solomon wrote, why would you want him here? Mm-hmm. His record is just barely above 500. He has six winning seasons. He has four playoff seasons. I mean, just ripped him apart.
Okay, Jeff, what is the allure with Jeff Fisher? I mean, I know what I like about him. What do you like about him? What do you think the allure? Is he a good coach?
I think he's a very good coach.
Why? What's good?
I think he gets a lot out of his team. I don't think he's had the best personnel in the league. I really don't. I mean, you look at the teams that he's had in the past. I mean, name me big-time receivers. Show me a big-time quarterback. Has he had one? I don't think he has.
Not since McNair.
I don't even think McNair was a big-time quarterback.
There were a couple years in there, Jeff. He was really one of the elite quarterbacks.
I don't think so, Vic. I mean, I played against the guy, watched the guy. I never put him in that elite category.
The thing I like about Coach Fisher's teams is they always play hard. Always.
Except last week, right?
Didn't play hard last week, but
wow,
you know,
that says something.
But they didn't play hard last year in New England either. But I've always said this about Jeff Fisher. He never has missed an opportunity with clock management or game management. Nothing has ever flown under his radar. He's never missed anything.
I got a couple of things I'll talk about that I think flew under his radar. And here's a guy that's on the competition committee. Do you mm-hmm. remember a few years ago, the Jaguars recovered a fumble when Kevin Mawai missnapped the ball. The ball stayed down. It didn't come up.
It was 2007.
Okay. And the Jaguars recovered it, and that was a change of possession. So there was a lengthy timeout. They had plenty of time to review this, and this guy's on the competition committee. It should have been a false start. A missed snap, a snap that does not come up off the ground, is a false start. In those days, it was. That rule has since been changed.
Right.
He should have known that.
It would have been called muff or something like
it's,
that.
It's a false start. It would have been a five-yard penalty. Tennessee would have kept the ball, and it was that play that really triggered the Jaguars' win in that game. I was stunned that Coach Fisher didn't know, because it was certainly – we saw it on the replay in the press box over and over during the commercial break. I was surprised that Coach Fisher didn't know that rule. The other one was, do you remember some years before that, Byron Leftwich was – possibly over the line of scrimmage when he threw a pass that was completed down near the...
That was 2005,
Titans,
yeah.
Okay, Titans goal line, down yep. near the goal line. The next day, Coach Fisher said in his press conference, that play is not reviewable. And it most certainly was reviewable, and I was stunned that a guy on the competition committee wouldn't know that that play, that crossed the line, you know, illegal pass potential...
Right.
is definitely reviewable. So there have been a couple times where I've scratched my head on his, you know, his sideline awareness.
Never forget, that was Byron Leftwich's best game of his career, because the next week in Phoenix,
got hurt.
Snapped the ankle, and we never really saw it again. So 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Not much time for a call here, so we've got a break for news. I'll say it again. It's interesting, in light of the Vince Young-Jeff Fisher divide, how people are taking sides in the deal.
How could you take Vince Young's side?
Well, Bud Adams is the most prominent one. I mean, he's the owner, and that's the only one really that he needs.
If they lose Jeff Fisher, their franchise will go in the tank for a long time.
Well, they might. Jeff Fisher's contract runs
Wouldn't
one more
Wouldn't be a
bad
year. Thing, would it?
No.
For this team.
Yeah, right. All right, folks. By the way, that last caller from... No, he's gone. All right, well, we'll hold off on this one.
Joe had a thought.
You have a thought?
Joe doesn't have
Well, Bud Adams has to. He's got to pay him. I mean, reverse the situation. Say he was here. Would Wayne come out against him?
No.
He wouldn't say anything bad about the guy.
But Bud Adams is wearing gloves now. Yeah. I mean, you know.
He's doing the Michael Jackson thing.
You know,
Coach Fisher, I mean, coaches are always right. I mean, what Vince Young did, you just don't cross that line.
No.
Never.
Plus he taunted the crowd.
He had a torn tendon in his thumb, but yet then he comes out and he says, "Coach didn't put me back in." Wah.
He needs surgery.
He had surgery. He's on IR. So he looks like a bigger doofus now.
Great way to put it. We'll leave on that note as we get set for news at the top of the hour. You can test drive the new 2011 Ford Super Duty, the new 2011 Ford Mustang, or the all-new Ford Fiesta when you visit your local Southern Ford dealer. More to come. Jaguars this week after the news on News Talk Radio. WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
We can test drive the new 2011. I read that one, didn't I, Joe? Huh, I forgot to change the car. Jaguars fans, check out the Fan Zone section of Jaguars.com. See how you can win Jaguars tickets and some great Jaguars merchandise. Just look for the list of participating Parts House Car Care Centers. The Parts House is an official sponsor of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Hour number two, Jaguars This Week, Jaguars big division game.
Let's shift gears a little bit.
Oh, well, where do you want to go?
Let's just make sure we cover this topic, because
okay.
this is big. The scavengers that are the people in Los Angeles trying to get a football team
okay.
Are circling like buzzards.
The Vikings.
You know, they're overhead, in Minneapolis, circling, trying to, you know, waiting for them to become so weak that they can get down and pick the meat off their bones.
And this week you've had a senior Viking official admit that they had.
That they have had contact from them, which is a way, of course, of putting pressure on the legislature in Minnesota to give us our stadium in January. You know, it's right. That's what it comes down to. It's either going to happen in January or they're gone. Either give us our stadium in January or adios. We're out of here.
Do you suppose?
Now, of course, I bring this up because this is good news for people in Jacksonville.
To a degree, because they're going to want to fill that Minnesota Vikings.
There are X number of franchises that have been identified as having Los Angeles potential, whether we want to admit it or not, this is one of
sure.
them. And I think we all admit that, you know, it's been targeted.
Well, how about the other side of it? Because it appears all of a sudden to be a race. Now you've got, is it Philip Anschutz, the billionaire?
In San Diego.
And he could control a significant portion, a third or more, of that Chargers organization. And, you know, he's working with that AEG group and the Leiwicki group. He could be the guy that brings the Chargers back to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've got Vikings, Chargers, who both would appear to be in play for a new stadium in L.A.
I would much rather see the Chargers move than the Vikings, and here's why. Because if the Vikings move out of Minneapolis, you're going to see a team move in. The market's just too good to abandon, and the league doesn't want to lose that NFC North dynamic that they have there. Whereas the Chargers are already in. If they move to Los Angeles, they're just moving to another part of their market.
Right.
Los Angeles and San Diego are in the same market.
Let me throw this out to you, and not as an excuse, but, you know, last year the Jaguars...
They're considered the same market.
Yeah. Yeah, to a large degree.
The NFL considers Los Angeles and San Diego to be the equivalent of Orlando and Jacksonville.
But it's different TV markets. I mean, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
They draw a lot of fans, and they get their games. Last year, the Jaguars had horrible attendance. Horrible. Yes. And finished 7-9. How about what's going on over in Tampa right now? 7-4 in the race for a wild card spot,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to black out another game over there.
The fan base in Tampa has just completely rejected the Bucs.
And this, by the way, was a franchise that had that billboard right outside mm-hmm. their stadium about their waiting list.
Well, we found out that was a lie. What they called a waiting list was nothing more than a database. In other words, if you had ordered a media guide from the Tampa Bay Bucks, you were in their database,
right.
and they considered you to be on their waiting list. So that was all a lie.
And the reason that I bring it up, because I mean, we've seen it here. We've got attendance issues here. We've got to sell tickets here. So
yes.
No one is looking down their nose at anyone. Please don't think that. You've got a 7-4 team going against the 9-2 Falcons at the front of their division.
Mm-hmm.
The weather's probably going to be magnificent
mm-hmm.
In early December in Tampa, and yet it's still, they're saying now that 50,000 would be the high end of the
They sell tickets for nothing. They sell tickets. They draw no one at the Rays games, all right? They are drawing.
Is that true, as good as they've been?
Oh, remember the last regular season baseball game? They were opening the doors, come on in free.
Mm-hmm. I pay no attention to baseball.
The Rays draw nobody.
Okay.
All right? The University of South Florida draws nobody. The Bucks are drawing nobody. I think the Tampa Bay Lightning's.
Joe, how's the Lightning do?
They draw nobody, right?
Nobody.
Nobody.
I mean, that is a quintessential bad sports town.
Some people should leave that town. I don't think it's going to be the Bucks, though, not with that stadium.
Well, I say this because they're going to start looking east at Orlando, much like the Jaguars are looking south at Orlando. Orlando could become a real battlefield for those two franchises.
Maybe you could build one stadium and a couple of different teams could play a couple of different games there.
I think we should get some tanks, roll down in there and take it.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Minnesota and the Anschutz thing this week popping up have made for an interesting story.
Yeah, and you know, and Jacksonville's enjoying it because for once they're not being mentioned.
Off them. Yeah, absolutely. But it doesn't mean
but
that
of course
you can get
if the Vikings get a new stadium in January, you know, put your seatbelts on, here we go.
Yeah, all of a sudden. Well, and it should be noted that if you see them go, that doesn't mean that you can get happy and get used to TV because someone's going to fill that Minnesota market.
Now,
Minneapolis St. Paul is too good. They will eventually come around and build a new stadium there at some point in time. It may be 7 years down the road.
And you know, of course, in San Diego, and I'll make this brief. The governor Schwarzenegger in California recently lifted the cap on spending in downtown San Diego, which was intended to allow the city of San Diego to now direct more money toward building a downtown stadium, as they did for Petco Park, right, for the Padres.
But
so,
for a state that's writing IOUs to its pension fund, $26 billion in debt.
Yeah, these guys, they'll find money. They'll steal it from somewhere.
355 NFL. What I'm saying there is I have a hard time seeing the state putting much money into any project like that in the dire circumstances that they exist right now.
Yep. I'm with you,
think
Brian.
That works against the Chargers staying in San Diego. I think it works towards Anschutz helping with this project in, what do they call it, City Center?
Yeah, I think
in
so.
In L.A.? I think that works against the Chargers staying in Southern, mm-hmm. but just...
Well, the Buzzards are...
I follow it pretty closely, too.
The Vultures are circling in Minneapolis.
355, and
as
you know
they
what?
Should, with the debt service they have.
$750 million.
Which is the value
how
of
you
the
gonna,
franchise.
Yeah, I mean, that's Art Modell-esque.
Here's the thing. I think I told you, you know, I grew up in the Midwest, and I was a St. Louis that. Football Cardinals fan, but I also was always a Vikings fan.
Really?
I was. I grew up because for a while I lived in Omaha, and they got all the games, and that was Fran Tarkenton.
Yeah.
That was Chuck Foreman.
Yeah.
Those were great teams,
yeah.
And they played outdoors at the old
Metropolitan Stadium in Bloomington. I covered games there.
And I remember watching the Hail Mary on TV.
77 right. against the Cowboys.
I remember the guy who announced the game, Gary Bender, but that's mm-hmm. just me.
How is football in St. Louis?
It's awful.
Because
it never has been good. It's a baseball town.
I've been saying things all night that
it's
I have no idea what I'm talking about, so why stop now? Wasn't there a story, I don't know, talking with you guys earlier in the week about Minnesota possibly going to St. Louis, which would send St. Louis back to L.A.?
I've never seen that. I don't know why.
Well, it's not going to happen because the Rams have a new owner, and he's a St. Louis guy through and through. You're going to see what you're going to see is the Rams are going to get a new stadium. Believe
it or
not.
Who got that? I didn't see that.
I don't know his name.
Cronky.
Cronky's a Columbia, Missouri guy. Yeah, but
that's the guy.
Did he get that? I didn't think that deal went through.
If it's not through, it's
because he owns
almost
the Nuggets
through.
And the Avalanche in Denver, and because of the cross ownership rules, he can't do it yet.
But
he's a Missourian. You're right.
Yeah,
if it becomes
that's the
him.
Guy, and that's the expectation there that they're going to get a new stadium. Believe it or not, I mean, as new as
Edward
Jones Stadium or whatever it's called.
That's a convention center.
It really is.
They didn't build that for football.
It looks like a gym. You know,
Hey, I go back to 87 when the St. Louis Football Cardinals left. There's an area right by the airport called Earth City with a view of the river. They were going to build a big stadium out there, and then Bidwell couldn't wait, and he went to Phoenix.
Here's what the problem, in my opinion, has always been in St. Louis. Yes, it is a baseball town. No, it hasn't been a good football town, but here's the problem. They've never had, other than the Bears, they've never had that true rival. Kansas City and
never been in the same
Chiefs,
conference.
And the Rams or any team in St. Louis has got to be in the same division.
Right.
All right.
But they're in different conferences.
Yes, they're in different conferences. I mean, so you know, the Cardinals were just pushed out of Chicago by Halas because he didn't want to have to compete with them in the same TV market.
Right.
And they were just kind of set adrift, and they've never been taken care of by the league.
It's not a football town. It's not. They love hockey. The Blues do very well. And they love baseball. The Cardinals are king. But what I'm saying is that you will see football return to Minneapolis, so no one can get complacent at the Vikings leave.
Oh, no.
You may not.
There's no way the NFL will allow that market to stay bare.
Nope.
They'll become the next Los Angeles.
Cleveland, Houston,
right.
However you want to lay that thing out, just because they leave for Southern California, if they do, it does not mean that football is safe in North Florida.
I want the Raiders in L.A. Then I'll feel safe.
You know what you could have? You could have three or four teams fighting over it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You could have Anschutz. You could have Al Davis. You could have the Vikings. Interesting. 355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. Season ticket holders, use your Jaguars rewards card when you purchase at least 10 gallons of gate gasoline. You'll get $2 in Jagbucks back. For details, check out Jaguars.com. Phone lines are lighting up. We will get to you when we return on Jaguars This Week. Presented by Aetna and only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Here we go. Jaguars this week, heading towards news at the bottom of the hour. Time for some phone calls, though. We'll start with John in Green Cove Springs. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. Good.
It's kind of a wild idea, and Vic, maybe you can probably tell me it's really a wild idea. But I got a feeling that, especially this Oakland game, we might have trouble selling tickets.
Not if you win Sunday.
Also, you know, maybe even the worsening game.
I'm hearing 6,000 tickets available about 6,000 tickets available for the next home game, which would be Oakland. Is it Oakland or Washington?
It's Oakland.
It's Oakland.
Oakland, yeah.
If they win on Sunday, I would expect those tickets to go pretty quickly. If they lose on Sunday, then that's going to get tough. And, you know, and I got to tell you, the thing that bothered me about the last game is, you know, I don't think all, well, we know all the tickets weren't bought. We know there was some generosity in there, and I hate that message that it sends, because it's that message that I think played a big part in creating what happened last year.
Well, what about a fan appreciation day for all the fans and stuff, and season ticket holders first get options and buy one ticket, get the other ticket free for the next two home games.
I'm sorry, I forgot to call
John.
John, they've done everything. I mean, this year, if you want to go back through the litany of things that they have done this year, you know, with Team Teal, this has been the greatest bojest in the history of NFL ticket sales. They have kissed the ticket buyer's fanny every step of the way. They have done everything with 30-30 plans and just everything.
I'm going to the website right now, because when you do, there's a splash page that says, give the gift of football this season, and if you buy a ticket to a Jaguars game, either the Raiders or the Redskins, they'll give you a gift voucher for a logo hat and T-shirt. So a hat and a T-shirt, plus a meal, which is a hot dog, soda, and popcorn, plus an exclusive holiday card. Now, John, is that not enough?
I haven't seen that advertisement.
Go to Jaguars.com right now. The first thing that'll pop up is a picture of a cheerleader in a Santa outfit and a gift pack.
You know, the crazy part is that fans like yourself now, John, are inventing things that already exist. I mean, we're at the point now, there's nothing more. There's nothing more you can do except just say, here's the ticket. Here's the ticket, you know, for free. And they did that in 2002 with Winn-Dixie, and they still didn't come.
Yeah, it didn't help. So this just in, folks, gift packs start at $60. Buy a ticket to one of the two remaining games against the Raiders on the 12th or the Redskins on the 26th. You get a voucher for a hat and a T-shirt, a meal, which is a hot dog, soda, and popcorn, and a holiday card from the Jaguars.
I don't think the civic-minded thing will fly for a second year in a row. I'm talking about, let's keep this team in town. Let's our team, our town. I mean, that was nice. You know, I call it save the whale, and it did save the whale this year. He is swimming. He's out in the water. He's not out real deep, but he's in deep enough where he can swim and breathe, and it worked this year. But I don't think you can do that again. I know that at some point these tickets will have to be purchased because they're hot tickets, because people want them and there's competition for them. Until we get to that day, it's really going to be, you know, there's going to be a degree of insecurity.
Week to week, game to game. 355-NFL-1, let's grab Larry in Mandarin. Larry, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys, how are y'all doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, I've been a season ticket holder since day one. Not that that matters much right now, but my question is, Zach Miller, how's his blocking come along? I know he missed
Jeffrey.
A critical block in the game this weekend, but in general, how's it come along? And, Jeff, I know you never played linebacker, but how would you like to play linebacker against this team with a block of granite, guided missile like Greg Jones coming at you? And if somehow you survive that, you've got to tackle a fire plug.
Yeah, I did play linebacker. I actually was a middle linebacker in college, and in my first year in the league, I was an outside linebacker and then got moved to defensive end my second year. So I know what it's about taking on fullbacks, and you know, when I every week, you know, we've got game boards that we prep for our broadcast on the radio, and I just reach forward to grab my board. And you know what I wrote down for Greg Jones? Pro Bowl, all pro level. He has probably been the most consistent high-level player the Jaguars have had all year. I mean, he's been that good. So, I mean, he's definitely a great player, Larry. I mean, and people recognize that. I mean, fullbacks aren't ever going to have this national acclaim. They're just not. If you took a poll, though, among GMs and coaches around the league, I guarantee you Greg Jones will be right at the top. Mm-hmm. As far as Zach Miller goes, then is he getting better at blocking? Yes. Did he have a bad missed assignment in the game? Yes. But the one thing I like about Zach Miller is we had him on our TV show a few weeks back, and he told us, he said, look, he said, I understand that I need to find a role as a blocker somewhere. So, and he knows that. He wants to get better at it. He follows Mercedes around wanting to pick his brain all the time so that he can become a better blocker. I mean, you got to remember, he was a quarterback a couple years ago. I mean, this is a as Vic would say, a jar on the shelf that's, you know, that's not just on the shelf. He's on the table, and we're watching that, you know, that fruit kind of bloom, you know. I mean, so give him time.
When he's
going to be good.
When he's in the game, Jeff, are you tipping to the defense that it's going to not be a run?
If he's the only tight end in there, yes.
Mm-hmm. Was he the only tight end in there on that first and 10 from the 29?
The one on the interference call on
no.
Kasim?
The sack that everyone wanted it to be a running play. First down at the 20, Giants 29.
I don't remember, but I mean, there were some plays that he was the only tight end on the field. I don't remember if that was one.
Larry, hold on the line because you've just won 20 Jaguar scratch-off tickets from the Florida Lottery. To play the Jaguar scratch-off game, visit a Florida Lottery retailer near you. Going to place you on hold. Joe will tell you how you can claim your Florida Lottery tickets. Wes joins us next. He is in Middleburg. Wes, welcome to the show.
Hey, Brian, Jeff, Vic, how are you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Hey, Jeff, I guess this question a little more for you. I kind of asked Jack a similar question last night. I just want to get a little more, I guess, technical analysis. We've been drafting these undersized defensive ends going back to Cordova and the guy to Missouri that had a broke hip, never played for us. And I just want to know, do you see anything out of Larry Hart that tells you this guy's going to be a 10-sack guy and he's going to start coming on in the next week or two? Or is he just going to kind of go like the other guys did? And I also want to know what you how you see Austin Lane's developing. He looks really athletic to me, the way he moves so smoothly. But, once again, he's not really getting a lot of pressure on the quarterback either. But, as always, guys, I enjoy your
Wes,
show.
Wes, don't go anywhere. Wes, stay on the line. We're going to name you the Metro PCS Caller of the Week. You'll receive a Jaguars prize pack. Remember, with no signed contracts, Metro PCS lets you unlimit yourself, and Joe will tell you about that as well. Go ahead.
Good questions, Wes. I'll start with Austin's bringing the pain lane. I really like the way he's playing. I really do. I mean, as far as playing the run, I mean, he is doing really well. And I think he's shown some pass rush ability. I mean, he is the prototypical 4-3 left defensive end.
Is he playing better than Harvey?
Yes.
Ooh.
Prototypical, stout, strong, very good motor, showing you, you know, things that he's got a lot of upside. Now, Larry Hart, have I seen signs that he can be a 10 sack a year guy? If you said, Jeff, watch the last four games and tell me what you think, I'd say no. But I watched the guy all through training camp. And it's very difficult for undersized guys to figure it out because they're now facing 6'6", long-armed, athletic tackles. And so there's an adjustment period that has to happen with an undersized player coming from a small school. He's got skills. He's got quickness. He's got power. I think he's going to be fine. I just think he needs time to develop. And it's been disappointing with Larry this year, in that you have not seen the steps to where he's starting to show improvement. I think what I've seen out of him is almost frustration to where it's like, it's just not working now. Now he doesn't know what to do, you know. And I know that Joe Cullen, D-line coach, is working very hard with him, because he believes that he can become a very good pass rusher, a special pass rusher. And I think he can, too, in due time.
I heard little birdie told me that Aaron Morgan's been having some good practices.
That's a nice young guy that they want to get going, too.
Well, and that's what, you know, is going to happen. If Larry doesn't make plays, and he had the offsides in New York, which doesn't help him out much, but you're going to get so many shots, just like Tyquan. And then after a while, if the production's not there, they've got to give the other guy a chance.
Right.
And that may happen with Aaron Morgan.
All right. Wes, call back. We'll tell you how you can get your Metro PCS prize pack. So call us back, talk to Joe. And as we go to news, we'll remind you, you can vote for your favorite MVP teacher to be the Community First Credit Union MVP Teacher of the Week. That means they could win club seats to the Jaguars game against the Raiders or the Redskins. It's all part of First Down Touchdown Teachers. Visit CommunityFirstFL.org for the details. More to come. Jaguars This Week rolls on after this on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
All right, here we go. Half hour left in the show. Big division game. Big, big, big. And I can say that with impunity because last week you said that a game wasn't big. So
yeah.
We can't be accused of always saying that every game is big.
That's why I said it last
week.
This
one's bigger. Well, thanks for laying the groundwork for that one.
I wrote in my blog before the kickoff, I said, I have a feeling that when the day ends, all four teams in the division will be one game apart.
And it worked.
Without saying, you know.
Who and what?
Well, a guy wrote in, hey, there's only one way that could have happened. And that means you were picking the Jaguars to lose.
It happens. 355-NFL-1. Let's grab a couple phone calls. We'll start with our old friend Lee, who joins us from Ponte Vedra. Lee, welcome to the show.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. I hope you guys had a happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we did, Lee. How about you?
Oh, it was wonderful. One downside, I wish you had a simulcast on the computer. Because I was out of town with my daughter and husband, and couldn't listen in. Anyway, that's just a side thought. I got to give praise to Vince Monowai.
Yeah.
You know, hey, we lost the game, but man, some of the blocks he made, particularly on David's run for a touchdown, yikes!
Hey, Lee, I got to tell you a quick story. I was sitting on the plane in Jacksonville Saturday, you know, as it was loading up to go to New York, and I see Vinny coming down the aisle. Of course, you never miss Vinny.
No, you got to get out of his way when you're sitting.
And as he started to come toward me, when he got near me, I said, "He's back, folks. Vinny is back."
Did he show any emotion at all?
He knew just what I meant, and he got a big smile on his face because he knows he's back.
He's so stoic most of the time.
Jeff knows.
He's playing real well. A couple weeks ago, I showed that one play of him on the smart board. And you know, I really could have showed 2-3 plays every week to where you just see how so physically dominant he is. And it's very rare that you find a player that plays in the National Football League that can use sheer power and overpower another. I mean, it just doesn't happen.
Thank goodness they didn't cut him.
I was just about to
and
say.
And they were close to cutting
genius
him.
Genius move
and he
to
knows
save him.
Oh,
genius move.
I was saying all back during our talks about roster cutdowns, I said.
You were big on Vinny.
You don't cut a guy that is capable of doing the things that he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing them again. And he's doing them and keeping his feet. He's moving quicker than he has in a long time. And right now, he's maybe their best lineman.
There was a faction here that thought he was shot, thought he was done. And he proved them wrong. And that's fine with me because I like him. I really like him. But I that smile on his face, he was trying to fight it back, but he knew just what I meant, and he's loving it right now. And by the way, I wrote a story. My story today is about Vince and what he means right now to this team. It's the same thing he meant at the same time of the year in 2007 when the Jaguars' running game got red hot with Fred and Mo, and Vinny was the guy they were running behind, and now Mo's doing it again.
And they were running behind him on Sunday, weren't they?
Yeah, they were running behind him, and you know, Vinny used to be viewed, in fact, was moved to right guard because he was viewed that he couldn't pull.
Right.
Oh, he can pull.
Now he's pulling again.
He's pulling again.
Good for him.
Vinny's doing everything again.
That's a road grader coming at you right there. Delete, did we cover it all, or was there another thought that you wanted to get out?
Actually, it's kind of my standard question. You guys review the tape. You look at the injury report. I'd like your thoughts on viewing the tape, the injury report. Where do we need to win the matchups, and how do we win the game?
I'll give you a little.
Thank you so much. I'll take it off the air. Appreciate your call. And you know what? You guys are so good. It drives my family crazy.
If I'm not
at the game, I mute the TV and listen to the radio. You guys are awesome, and I love your show every night. Thank you so much. Every Wednesday night. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lee.
Yeah, move him to the front of the line.
I'll tell you where I think they have to win.
Go ahead.
You got to win a quarterback because you got a mismatch. You should have a mismatch. You don't have a mismatch at running back. I don't think you have a mismatch on defense. I think you've got a situation, a quarterback, where you need to win and win big.
I think there's two areas that have to be won. One is quarterback, and two is special teams.
You're right about special teams, absolutely. They didn't win in New York, and they should have. They should have won big.
Well, you know, and they've got a good returner in Tennessee in Mark Mariani, rookie. Heck, I mean, they're ranked right at the top in the National Football League. But me and Brian were talking earlier. When's the last game you've seen special teams have a big impact
Giants,
in the return game?
Giants special teams are awful. And the Jaguars should have won and won in a big way. And the Giants got some returns in that game, you know, decent returns. And the Jaguars didn't get much in the way of returns.
Deji needs to step it up. Mike Thomas needs to step it up. That needs to be an advantage in Tennessee because we know how they are, whoever's playing quarterback, whether it be Rusty or whether it be Kerry. Yeah, it's a field position team. They always have been.
Absolutely.
And special teams always play a big role.
And you know, of course, Coach Fisher will always have a special teams trick play, in his back pocket.
Always has. 355-NFL-1, we go back to the phone lines. James Mandarin, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Good.
I got a question about Sean Considine. Here in the past three or four games, obviously I know he's been on the bench, but he comes out and he plays like a starting safety in the NFL. I was wondering, with your opinion, do you think he's going to start again? And why all of a sudden is he making plays? Is it, I don't know if he had an injury in preseason or not. And, as far as Don Kerry, I just don't know if he's ready.
Yeah, but Sean Considine is perfect in the role they have him in right now. As a starter, he was not judged to have been successful. Now you're judging him as successful. Well, I just figure it out. This is just what he does. This is perfect for him. You're going to have to sacrifice some growing pains with these young safeties, or you're not going to find out whether they can play or not, and that means you won't know on draft day whether you've got to turn your attention there.
Yeah, I James got a good point. I mean, if the guy's making plays like that, why doesn't he get a shot at being a starter?
I think why didn't he make plays like that when he was a starter?
Well, he wasn't in as a starter for very long. I mean, he got hurt. You know, and I think that's probably part of the fear of having him be a starter.
Do you think he should be a starter?
Right now,
mm-hmm.
I think his play in the last 3 weeks would warrant playing time as a starter.
At free safety.
Wherever it is.
Well, is he more free or strong?
Either one. You can play either one.
Courtney Greene's playing better.
Courtney Greene's playing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Although, had a bad play in New York, a couple of them. But, you know, he's young and he's played pretty well, considering he's a first-time starter.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Appreciate the phone call, James. We've got one more caller before our final break of the evening, and it's Don on the north side. Don, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Hi, Vic.
Hello.
And Jeff?
Don, good evening.
Hey, I sat bolt upright when you mentioned that one end in the game on a run. I mean, if one coach has caught that, Vic, holy smokes!
Yeah, but you're talking about the tight end, right, Don?
Yeah.
You got to remember, football is not played by the smartest guys. There is actually situations where a lot of players wouldn't even recognize the fact that, you know, for us, we watch the Jaguars all the time. We know what Zach Miller is. You know, for an opponent, they only watch a couple games, so they don't know every tendency as well as Jaguar fans may know. Mm-hmm. So they may not, in the heat of the moment, even recognize the fact that, you know, hey, Zach Miller's the only tight end in there. That may be totally unseen. And the coaches sometimes, on the opponents, they don't even see that sometimes in the heat of the moment. So, I mean, that's not that big of a tip. Now, there was a tip. I remember the biggest tip I've ever seen is that there was a guy that played tackle somewhere in the league, and if he was in a three-point stance, it was a run. If it was he was in a two-point stance, it was a pass. Mm-hmm. He's a defensive lineman. That's gold. But, I mean, sometimes personnel, you don't know. Mm-hmm. So that's not that big of a deal. But now, if it keeps happening, then it becomes a trend, and then they're going to see
well,
that.
Well, this is the problem with tight ends who are one-dimensional. They're really not tight ends. I'm sorry. Antonio Gates is not a tight end. He's a wide receiver.
No, he's a tight end.
He's not a good blocker.
He is a good blocker.
Antonio, when did that happen?
Antonio Gates is actually a pretty decent blocker. Now, he is not Jason Witten.
He's strictly a receiver.
Very good blocker.
Whoa. Witten.
Yeah. Jason Witten is a very good blocker.
Huh. Surprised me with that.
Yeah. And see, I haven't watched a lot of the Cowboys because, you know, what do we play them every couple of years?
Yeah.
You know, so I don't watch a lot of tape on Jason Witten. But this year with the Cowboys game, and of course, common opponents, I watched a lot of Cowboys this year.
So who are the blockers?
I told Brian that. I said, holy cow, Jason Witten's a good football player.
Who are the blockers? Mercedes Lewis. Who else?
Lewis. Kevin Boss is a pretty good blocker. Uh-huh. Moyaki, the kid in Kansas City, is actually a very willing blocker. Uh-huh. The ones that don't, Tony Gonzalez just kind of gets in the way.
Mm-hmm. Is Mercedes the best?
Oh, no question.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not even close.
Really?
No.
I'm
talking about best blocking tight end that can also catch the ball.
Right.
I mean, if you ever need an example of blocking can be taught,
it's him.
It's him, because coming out of college, you couldn't block. Never blocked.
Learn from one of the best.
Yeah.
You know, and you hope Zach learns from Mercedes along the way. Mm-hmm. So we'll see, because Zach needs to become a better blocker so that he can have more of an impact for this offense.
All right, we need to take our final break of the evening. We'll come back, go to Chicago, where Mike is holding on the line after this on Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna and only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. About 9 minutes left in the show. Mike, as promised, held through the break in Chicago, and we bring him up now. Mike, how are you tonight?
How are you?
Good.
They moved me to Chicago. Quick question about the, and you may have already covered this, I hope not, but the Cortland Fagan, the defensive back for the Titans, would seem to me that the referees would be paying more attention to him this week after the publicity from this past weekend, especially when you look at the start of the fight. You know, Finnegan's got his hand right in Johnson's face, almost like grabbing the face mask. Do you guys see it that way?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, he should become the most targeted player in the league.
Yeah, he was one that instigated it, and when I watched the tape, you know, I literally watched all the plays to watch, you know, evaluate the team and look at different players. But I also wanted to watch all of the plays that Finnegan and Andre Johnson had that were leading up to that. And Andre Johnson didn't do anything dirty. Didn't do anything that was mischievous to Cortland Finnegan. He just blocked him. And Finnegan didn't like it because there were like three runs that broke for long runs that by Aaron Foster that Andre Johnson had blocked Finnegan to where Finnegan couldn't come off and make a play. And you could tell Finnegan was getting very angry. And on that one play, he was in press coverage, but not having his feet square. He looked like in a sprinter stance, ready to lurch forward. And when the ball was snapped, he did just that and went hands to the face right away. And so I don't blame Andre Johnson for getting angry, but I don't know about throwing the punches. But I will say they were pretty doggone good.
And the Jaguars take advantage of that.
Well, I mean, hey, Cortland Finnegan's no dumb guy. I mean, he's been playing that style of football for a long time. You got to be real careful about doing that kind of thing because, you know, he's always stayed within the rules. He's gotten fined before, but he's never been one that's gotten penalties like that. So, I mean, he's no dummy now.
My only thing is with him is that the league fined him twice earlier this year and then said in their fine, if it happens again, you're going to get suspended. And it would seem to me if you're going to fine him, you should suspend him.
So you get $25,000 for punching someone repeatedly in the face, and you also get a $25,000 fine for tackling somebody.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be much rhyme or reason to it, does it?
I'll tell you, I better stay out of this because I have very strong thoughts about what the commissioner is doing to this game.
You're going to see Cortland Finnegan lined up against Mike Thomas. Gene and I had a conversation yesterday when he came in for his weekly pregame interview.
That's where he'll be.
And he said Mike Thomas is a guy who can win a one-on-one matchup. Can he win it with Cortland Finnegan?
Well, I mean, he's the best as far as man coverage goes for the Jaguars. And, yeah, he can win. I mean, Finnegan covered Andre Johnson everywhere on the field, and so you would expect that if they implement the same type plan, put you know him on their best guy, that it's going to be Mike Thomas. And Mike Thomas will have his handful. I mean, Cortland Finnegan is a heck of a football player. And what was he, seventh-round pick?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, holy cow, talk about striking gold.
I saw him take a cheap shot early in the season in a game that was just stunning. It was a cross-body block to the back of a offensive lineman's knees away from the ball. It was clearly I'm going to take you out shot, and it wasn't seen by the officials, and he didn't get fined for it either. And Jeff, if I showed it to you on film, you'd say, "Boy, you're right."
Yeah, I'd like to see it,
guys. I'm told we need to take another quick break. We'll take it and be back after this on Jaguars Radio. Okay, back to wrap things up here in the next minute or so. You know, big game Thursday. Well, I'm using the word big because but an interesting game Thursday, Houston at Philadelphia.
No, it's a big game because if Houston loses, that's it. It's like I said, at that point, the Jaguars can win the division title before they even go to Houston by winning the next four games.
Washington at the New York Giants. Thoughts on that game? Atlanta, Tampa Bay. I mean, those are some games with
contenders.
Atlanta,
Tampa Bay is a good one. I mean, I think Washington and Giants are always good just because it's a division game. It's two big markets.
We'll have our attention, obviously, on the Oakland at San Diego game because Oakland comes here the next week, and it looks like they've fallen off the face of the map in recent weeks. And Dallas is at Indianapolis.
I think Dallas may win that game.
Because they have a pass rush? Because they don't have a running game.
Indianapolis is – I mean, after what I saw the other night, I mean, I don't get it. I mean – defensively, no, I don't say I think they quit. It's just that, that's a quarterback-driven team. I mean, that's what that team is all about. Mm-hmm. They don't have anything else that can help him right now.
And quickly, mm-hmm. Pittsburgh at Baltimore is the Sunday nighter. That's outstanding. And then the Monday night is, after two really bad ones, Denver at San Diego, San Francisco, Arizona, the Jets at New England.
Great game.
Yeah, well, that decides who plays a wild card game.
Yeah, I like the home teams in both of those games for the obvious reason.
I'm not so sold on Baltimore. I just don't know if I just – I mean, their defense is good, but
– Yeah, I'd say that too, but at the same time, I mean, Pittsburgh struggled with Buffalo.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh's got massive offensive line problems. Roethlisberger was sacked five more times Sunday.
I mean, how Pittsburgh's elite, and they had to go to OT and really shouldn't have won that game.
Yeah. Well, that'll do it. Right. Folks, we'll talk to you from LP Field in Nashville on Sunday afternoon. Thanks, guys.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good night, Joe.